All right. So are we ready to go, Andy?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 125 for March 20th, 2008. We've got a great show lined up for you. Today, we'll reveal who on staff has beaten a long-standing PC Gamer record for gluttony. We're going to introduce a brand new regular segment that I'm sure you're going to love. We'll find out why some Mexican pirates said adios to their profits this week, and also answer the question of what happens when 80 video game character cosplayers get together. I'm Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor, and I'll be your host this week. We're joined today by our Senior Editor, Logan Decker.
And cosplayer, hi.
Senior Associate Editor Dan Stapleton.
And Senior Glutton.
Our Senior Executive Intern Norman Chan.
Merely a Junior Glutton.
And our Producer Andy Bauman.
Confused at what a cosplay is.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in just a moment. Before we begin, though, I'd just like to give a short update on America's Next Top PC Gamer Reviewer Contest, which I know has been going on for way far too long because I totally underestimated the number of entries that we're going to get for it. We will be announcing the finalist on next week's podcast, though, so please come back. It's just taken me a lot longer to get through the 200-plus entries that we received for it. So you try reading 200 reviews of Peggle. on good news or gluttonous news, I suppose, that's taking place here at PC Gamer this week, Dan Stapleton has beaten a long-running record that's been held by Bill Harm since 1999. Would you like to tell them exactly what you did, Dan?
I don't think it sounds as impressive coming from me, because that's just bragging, you know.
Well, let's tell the story what happened 9 years ago. In 1999, right. We ran a story in PC Gamer, I believe it was the October issue, where Billy Harms, Creamy Smooth, who was on our podcast last week, he challenged Mike Salmon at PC Accelerator at an eating contest. And the challenge was how many Ultimate cheeseburgers from Jack in the Box could you eat in one sitting, in addition to an Oreo shake? And Billy has been very proud of the fact that he consumed 4 Ultimate cheeseburgers in one sitting.
90 minutes.
Yes.
There's a photo of him, you know, with the thumbs up. And that record is held for 9 years. Until yesterday, when we decided to beat Billy, and Dan decided.
Well, yeah, not we, Dan.
No, Dan Dan stepped up to the plate, we went to Jack in the Box, bought a dozen Ultimate Cheeseburgers, and Dan ate as many as he could, and in record time, he broke Billy's record.
So how many did you eat total? You ate, what, 5?
I ate 5 Ultimate Cheeseburgers, yes.
5 Ultimate Cheeseburgers, and how long did it take you?
The total of time was an hour, so 60 minutes.
We're missing a little supplemental touch to that meal.
What's that?
Plus the shake.
Well, there was the Oreo shake. That was part of Billy's original meal, so we had to throw that in. And then Norm tried to at least match what Mike Salmon ate way back then, which I believe was, what, 3 burgers and bites?
3 bites, after which he cried.
I was there. He was my boss at the time, and I remember he was really ill. He was so sick after that.
He
was actually making the same faces that you were making yesterday, Norm.
It was pretty painful, because I've had my fair share of, you know, McDonald's double cheeseburgers or Wendy's double stackers, but an Ultimate Cheeseburger from Jack in the Box is a burger on a whole new level. It's not even like a good burger. It's just a very substantial burger. We check the nutritional stats on the Jack in the Box website, and each ultimate cheeseburger, which is just patty cheese, that's it. You know, and mayo. The meat cheese, that's it. Each cheeseburger has 1,010 calories, of which 640 is pure fat.
So 64%
fat.
How as a nation did we get to this?
When the recommended caloric intake is 2,000 calories, I did my part. Right, for an average person, I am an average person. I ate 2 1/3, plus the entire Oreo shake.
And so the funny thing was that I wasn't even competing, and I ate more than Norm did. I ordered the sirloin cheese melt, which I strongly recommend. It's very delicious. Curly fries, and then I inherited an extra ultimate cheeseburger and a half from Norm, and I had a chocolate milkshake. So without even competing, I beat Norm. And you know what? I think I could have gone for the record, actually.
Yeah, I think Chuck would be a worthy adversary, but I don't know. I think even I am kind of over the hill. It's competitive eating is a young man's game.
It really is.
I think if I had done this when I was in college, I would have easily put down a sixth. But this was a challenge for me. I was thinking I might go for six initially, but you know it took me 45 minutes to get that last burger down. You know, and the first three were that or the first four rather were you know that was easy, but the last one that was a challenge.
But there was a lot of smack talk going around from people who weren't participating.
I actually recall names, a lot of bravado from Norm just before the contest.
Yeah, how you were going to easily beat Mike Sammons.
Easily.
I might have. At least I tried. I might have overstated my my ability.
But you were starting to cry after your first hamburger.
No. That's an exaggeration.
You were having a hard time getting through the first one.
That was just for the camera.
What a showman!
Wait, so there's video of this or no?
There are many photos, and we did film an intro, which I think we'll be eventually posting online.
Sweet. Yeah, we got the first bites on camera. But yeah, I think it should be mentioned that in his prime, Logan Decker probably would have put us all to shame.
Yeah, those days are long ago, but I did have quite a reputation.
I was most impressed because we couldn't find the Jack in the Box. The Jack in the Box that we found online didn't exist anymore. We drove to one in South San Francisco, which... You know, we were at the right address, and there was no Jack in the Box. And we called Logan, and he knew exactly how to get to a second off the top of his head. He knew exactly which exit, what turn to make. You know,
it's a head of Marcia.
Ask for Fran; she'll help you out.
But yeah, before the Healthy Living Initiative, as it's referred to around the office, Logan was a machine.
Oh yeah.
But I was just lucky that the timing worked out for me, that I was able to achieve this record, and I expect it will stand for a further 9 years, and that many will die in the attempt to break it.
I would challenge you, but I would want to wake up the next morning.
Plus, Dan deserves a few extra points for the cavalier way in which he broke the record. Just kicked back at his chair, you know, chomping slowly and methodically through all five.
It was very true.
Impressive.
Well, the first few weren't all that slow. I was showboating.
Norm was purple.
Oh, my. Norm was doing that thing where he was like holding himself over the desk, like, you know, like he was like halfway between either starting to run or starting to hurl.
Looked at the burger in pain. The half-finished burger, and it was taunting me. I tried to take bites, but they were just nibbles by the end.
Yeah, at the end, he looked like a gerbil who had like a piece of bread in his hand, was just kind of nibbling at it.
Yeah, and it's really amazing when you're that full and you look at just like a bite or two of hamburger left, and it's like, I'm not sure I can do that. You know, it's I just don't usually get in a space where I think that's going to be a problem.
Eventually, housekeeping was putting newspaper underneath Norm.
Yeah, it's not a problem putting it in your mouth. The problem is chewing it and then actually getting it down into your stomach. That's the tough
part. That's what the Oreo shake is for.
but now that we've thoroughly disgusted it. Anyway.
Yes, moving right along, excuse me. Let's go right to our brand new segment. Welcome, everyone, to Master PC Theater. So this is how it's going to work. We here in the office are going to reenact a scene from a PC game, and you out there have to guess which game it's from. The first person to name the correct game on this episode's podcast comments at www.pcgamerpodcast.com will receive serious props on our next podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Unfortunately, one of the parts is for a woman, and Kristen is out sick today, so I'll be playing the female part. So if you happen to hear what sounds like a tranny hooker, it's probably me.
So, Andy, you were asking about cosplay. This is kind of like it.
Yeah.
This
except without the cosplay.
Voice. What was that? Was there a question?
Well, cosplay, you need costumes.
Right. But it's in the spirit of cosplay. Okay.
Okay, so, Norm, take it away.
I'm freezing my ass off over here.
You said that already.
I'll say it again. I'm freezing my ass off.
What am I supposed to do about it?
You won't do nothing. I already told you. I'm gonna handle it.
Oh, Lord.
Shut up, both of you.
I don't have to stand for this. I know my rights.
You don't got no rights.
Just keep an eye out for the highway patrol.
You don't got money. You don't got rights.
You said it.
I'm not gonna roll over and die like a dead dog.
You weren't kidding about leaving New York.
Here I am, other side of the continent.
How'd you end up at a gas station? Oh, sorry. How'd you end up at a vacant gas station near the ruins of Los Angeles?
I was hitching a ride to Eugene, and this jerk pulls a gun on me, takes everything I have, and dumps me on the side of the road.
That's terrible.
I was pretty down for a while.
You can always go back.
No, I know how to stick to a plan. I'll walk to Eugene if I have to.
Well, good luck.
Thanks. Believe it or not, sometimes I miss the Ton and Janie and Jordan Shea and all the rest of it. I'll get by. I always do. Really, I'll be okay.
And see.
That's it.
Wow. You know, Sandra reminds me of somebody I used to pass in the Tenderloin.
Don't say the names.
Yeah, bleep the name.
Well, I think it's okay to say Sandra. That's pretty generic. But
okay.
Okay. So if you can name that game, hurry to our podcast comments and submit your guess. Now, if you'd like us to continue doing Master PC Theater, we definitely need your help. Game scripts are kind of hard to come by, so if you have a favorite scene from a PC game, send us a transcription of the scene to editor@pcgamer.com, and we just might act it out for you on the show. Now, you wouldn't be able to name the game for fame and personal glory and all that, but we will credit you for having sent it in to us. Scene should be for at least two people, and they shouldn't be terribly obvious, so you can't have a scene like, you know, hi, I'm a stalker and I'm at Chernobyl, something like that.
And who better to bring games to life than the staff of PC Game?
No, it's a me, it's a Mario. That might be a little obvious.
I'm sure we can dig up some prizes to send to the winners or whoever submits a script.
It's very possible. We may have some prizes. I always have some junk. I mean valuable prizes laying around on my desk, so I could probably stand to part with some of it. So anyway, let's see what's been going on in the news this week. Well, it looks like 28,800 Illegal duplicated games were seized in Mexico City this week. Apparently, a bunch of pirates were raided by over 500 law enforcement officers, taking roughly 290 DVD CD burners, 28,800 legal copies of video games, and more than 900,000 video game cover inserts. Now, I'm assuming that that's probably covering, like, you know, console and PC games.
Almost certainly.
Yeah. What games do you think were, you know, they didn't say what games they were, right?
Actually, you know, I'm not sure that they could necessarily do it with console games because you need a modded console to be able to play them, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, unless they you know, market, like, they were selling them as, you know, games that you need a modded console to play, which would defeat the purpose of having the inserts, like, counterfeiting them. It seems like they would kind of have to be PC games.
Wow, 28,000 illegal copies. I mean, that's more games are probably downloaded illegally, you know, online. Yeah. But hard copies, that's a lot.
Right, and this is different, a bit different from online piracy in that, you know, these guys were actually selling these and making a profit off of it.
In it for profit.
Yeah, whereas online pirates, you know, which, you know, we still strongly discourage, you know, they are just sharing it. They're not making any money off of it.
Sad thing is, this is probably just like a drop in the bucket, you know?
Oh, yeah.
A fraction of a drop.
It's kind of like whenever they have like a huge drug bust here in the United States, and it's like, you know, oh, we seized all these drugs, and like it was like a big like crate worth of heroin or whatever. And it's like, you know, nothing really happens, you know? I mean, the drug trade still continues.
Right, and this isn't going to shut, you know, anybody but these guys down. Somebody else will probably spring up to fill their place if that demand exists. So.
I can't help but be a little overwhelmed by this number here. Over 500 law enforcement officers raided the facilities.
Yeah, how
that's
many
an army.
Well, yeah, it is an army. And actually, one of the surprising things to me was that in some of the comments for the story, people were actually like, almost upset about it, like, you know, well, don't the police there in Mexico City have better things to do than prey on these poor pirates?
500, though, that's a staggering.
Yeah, I mean, you think they could, you know, have maybe you know 50 guys to handle the game pirates, and you know the other 450 can
face resistance.
I mean, I just see that's 500 true. Guys, you know, and they're all holding hands and they're just blanketing the area, you know. They throw themselves from a plane. It's like a giant human blanket, a net that covers the whole area.
Maybe they heard lots of gunfire.
Well,
from
I'm sure they
the
needed
games.
People to help carry or to help, you know, ship the games out of there. I'm wondering what they did with the legal copies. I mean, 28,000 CDs is that's a big stack of CDs.
That's a hell of a LAN party.
Well, almost certainly, you know, some of the games that were seized in this probably had the Tom Clancy name on them. And today, Ubisoft just announced that they have actually acquired the Tom Clancy name. I guess for the past 10 years, they've been just kind of renting it out on a yearly basis. And it's kind of cute almost in their press release. They didn't actually say, you know, they said that they couldn't say how much it is that they paid for it. They just kind of said, like, what their net cash position was before the sale and what it is now after the sale, and there's a difference of 20 million euros.
Wow.
So you're supposed to kind of, like, I guess, you know, hey.
That's like $40 million.
It's like $30 million. It's 1.5.
It's like still a lot of money.
Yeah.
But it's the right to...
The euro is about $1.50. The British pound is about $2.
Mm-hmm. But what exactly did they buy? I mean, is it just his likeness? I mean, his ideas. What is it?
Well, they own his children.
I think they just own his name so that they can say Tom Clancy's whatever. You know, I don't think he's actually had anything to do with any of the games for like the past, you know, almost 10 years now.
Wow, well,
they're just based on
the first Rainbow Six.
Yeah, they're based on his franchises, but outside of that, I mean, he doesn't design them or probably, you know, bother to have a lot of input on them.
Well, I think he did have considerable input on at least the first first couple.
Way back when they first you know started Red Storm, and everything. You know, he did have like some input on the first couple of games, but
and the characters that would be in the games would be characters that were in his books. You know, like Ding Chavez, and these are the same characters that were in like the Jack Ryan series.
Or actually vice versa, because with Splinter Cell, he actually did a Splinter Cell book after the game came out.
Mm. There was a Rainbow Six book before the game, or at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's what it was based on.
Yeah.
The game was based on the book. So, but I guess they probably only own the name in context of video games. Or does the press release make that clear?
Right. Well, I'm assuming he can still use his own name. like when he's signing check, it's Ubisoft's Tom Clancy.
Right, and but I mean, like when he writes another book, you know, it's not going to be
Ubisoft.
Right.
Well, the press release says that Ubisoft acquired all intellectual property rights to the Tom Clancy name on a perpetual basis and free of all royalty payments for use in video games and ancillary products, including related books, movies, and merchandising products. So
the video game stuff.
Right.
Oh, okay. So not like his previous books.
Right. So if they made a game that they just called Tom Clancy's, Tom Clancy's Shooter X. What was the suggestion, Logan?
Cooking Mama.
Yeah. Or if they made Tom Clancy's random game, and then somebody were to turn that into a movie, they would own that in that context.
I don't think they would own it, but they would be. They wouldn't have to pay royalties.
Well,
to use that, it.
That's what they. What's meant by owning?
Sure.
What does ownership mean to you, Norm?
I guess for Ubisoft, it's a pretty good investment, though, especially if they were paying them, you know, I think I saw one line estimate was that they were paying them 5 million euros a year or something like that. So yeah.
So we can expect a lot more Tom Clancy branded games coming out.
We can expect it, you know, at least 5 years worth, if not much, much longer.
Yeah, do you think gamers care? I mean, is the Rainbow Six brand more important than the Tom Clancy brand, or do you think having Tom Clancy's name on top of a game matters?
I think they've got at least three franchises with Tom Clancy's name on it now. So
I mean, remember,
well, I mean there are two more coming up, right? I mean, Endwar and the Air Combat one.
Right. So I mean, that's three. Those are the three I was referring to. Those and Rainbow Six. Are there any more?
Splinter Cell and
Splinter Cell. Yeah, I forgot about Splinter Cell.
Yeah, Ghost Recon.
Yeah. Do they refer to it as Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell?
Yeah.
Okay. It is on the box, yes.
Right.
I think the Tom Clancy name used to mean a lot more, especially when it was more of a tactical sim type world, but I don't know now if it really means anything, because the franchises have sort of spoken for themselves.
Right, but it's trying to carry over the prestige that the Rainbow Six series has to other games. So, I mean, when you start up a new franchise, you don't have any name recognition. So if you don't have something that associates it with another already popular game, it's harder to get to gain some traction. It's purely marketing. But
I see that. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely
this
think
this is where Clive Barker wishes he was at.
I think it matters if you go to the store, you know, and you see Tom Clancy's name on something, you're automatically going to hopefully expect that it's going to have the same polish and sophistication as the previous products and series. So, well, moving right along, there has been a blow to the esports community. The Cyber Athlete Professional League, CPL, has ceased operation. They've completely shut down, and there's not going to be any more contest, unfortunately. No more video game competitions.
Not from them.
Not from them.
From the
that's
CPL.
True.
And like the World Series of games, video games, they closed down last year. And so this is the second really major professional league, cyber athlete league, whatever, to shut down. And I think they just couldn't find sponsors. I know this the CPL has been running for like 10 years or so, and they had a ton of press, and they had huge, you know, winter events, summer events. They did a tour around the globe, and most of the people you would consider, you know, successful cyber athletes like Fatality or Thresh made the most of their money from the CPL, because the prizes were so lucrative.
So what do you think? What do you think caused them to shut down now? And like having 10 years.
I think advertisers have wised up. I mean, you can't expect a company like Nvidia to put in like $100,000 for a prize when they're only going to reach 5,000, 6,000 gamers who already buy their products.
Well, so, do you think it might have anything to do with the championship gaming series starting up?
I think there's a limited number of. I mean, obviously the prize pool is limited, so you can't have like three different leagues competing. And there are only so many gamers too. And I think because so many of the professional gamers are committed to the CGS, they sign exclusive contracts. The talent just wasn't there anymore.
And CGS, they also have distribution with DirecTV, so you can actually watch your stuff, on TV if you have that service.
So there was a competitor that offered a better package for advertisers. They can sell both the events and the broadcast rights and everything, advertising.
And the CGS, I think they had more non-gaming and non-tech related sponsors. I think like Mountain Dew was a sponsor, or more mainstreams. Sponsors.
All right, so this isn't like an indication that gaming, like professional gaming, is like on the decline or anything. It's just a shift from one company to another.
Well, but
I mean, very possibly, because we haven't really seen whether or not the CGS is actually going to prove itself yet. I mean, it's still a fairly new company.
I mean, proponents of professional gaming have been saying that it's going to be the next breakout thing for the past 5 years, and it really hasn't happened yet, because at least not in the United States. I know overseas it works, but
I think Korea, Americans, is just amazing.
Americans just don't want to watch people play Counter-Strike over their TV.
Well, another thing that CGS is doing is they're actually like tweaking some of the games that they use, or actually all the games that they use, to make them more watcher friendly. So for example, if you're playing, and I forget which game is it? Rainbow Six? Which shooter?
Well, Counter-Strike is a shooter.
Counter-Strike Source. Okay, so for Counter-Strike, one of the challenges is that it's always played from a first-person perspective, and so it's a little weird, when you're trying to watch it and they keep switching between players. And so what they've done for the CGS is that for spectator mode, you get to actually watch it from a third-person perspective.
And that's something that's always been, I think, in the Source engine. You can view for spectator modes. But what they've done really well is having like the pregame commentary explaining to viewers how the match works, what the typical tactics are, and then they do the play-by-play and then the color commentary with two broad sportscasters during the match. And
commentary really does make it like, and not just bland commentary, but commentators who actually know what they're talking about, have maybe a history in gaming themselves, so they can like appreciate like an innovative or any remarkable moves and point them out to viewers. That really does elevate it and makes it much more watchable than it is just playing on its own.
And even though the CPL ceased operations, I don't think the Cal League, which was kind of like the side company for the CPL, the Cyber Athlete Amateur League, which is online only, I don't think they're going to stop. They're still going to have their online tournaments, and that's really where most of the players go to, because they can play remotely, and it's free to join and play.
Cool. Well, goodbye CPL, but hello to Prey 2 and Sims 3 were both officially announced this week. How's everybody feel about that?
I liked Prey a lot.
Prey 2 cannot come soon enough.
Well, there were a lot of cool things to Prey. It had flaws. I mean, like the whole spirit walking thing was a bit underutilized. I felt like there was a total of like one puzzle that you could really do with it, and that's to walk through a force field and turn the force field off, and then return to your body and go through that now open passage. And there were a few things like that where there were pathways you could only see or only walk over as a spirit. But it just
plus you can never die.
Well, Yeah, I mean, but I mean that's going around a lot lately. So I don't really. Fantastic. And BioShock did kind of the same kind of thing, and that kind of setup, you know, it pisses off hardcore gamers who want a challenge, but it makes it more accessible to people who, you know, don't want to fight, you know, the same guy over and over and over again until they beat him. They want to have just steady progression through the game. Without having to replay the same part over and over again, and I can appreciate that. There are certain games that have pissed me off because they are too hard, and this makes it easier. Now it's not a universal appeal thing, certainly, but the use of portals in that game and gravity were pretty. I mean, I can't recall another game that had used them that well. I mean, prior to Portal, so mm-hmm. and
especially the gravity stuff.
Right, the gravity stuff was really disorienting, and that did make some people a little bit queasy.
It was awesome for multiplayer.
Oh yeah, for multiplayer it was great, because I mean you had to watch the ceilings and the walls, and you know it's just, you know, something new and unexpected. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing a sequel. The thing that I was surprised at was that they are making a sequel, because I heard that the first one just hadn't sold well at all.
Well, this is the first game, or will be one of the first games launched by a new group, right? Isn't it the Radar Group?
The Radar Group, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is that a publisher, or what is that?
I'm not exactly sure.
That's a good question. Yeah, it says, founded in June 2007, Radar Group co-creates original IP designed from the ground up for successful leveraging in game and film markets. So it sounds more like they're idea people rather than an actual publisher.
But Human Head is still doing the development, right?
It doesn't look like that's actually made clear.
Hmm. Yeah, if they change developers, midstream, I don't know.
It is Human Head Studios. They are doing it again. Yes.
Right. And okay. Good.
Human Head is doing it, and it's coming out for Xbox 360 and PC.
Well, just like the first one.
Yeah. Do you think, like, post-Portal, like, are people going to expect now that you should be able to control the portals that open up?
Oh, the bar has definitely been raised in Portal technology. I think, mm-hmm. The puzzles people are going to expect from portals they're really going to have to put a lot of effort into that. And one thing that praise portals did that portals did not, at least if you apply them to like Half-Life or another Source game, you can get portals working in there, is that enemies could pass through them and use them, which is a very cool, it can be frustrating the same way that Doom's monster closets were frustrating. You know, suddenly there are enemies over here where they could not possibly have gotten by any conventional means, but it's another different and unexpected thing. And so they were ahead of Portal in that department anyway. So if they can somehow figure out a way to get portals that you can both open on your own, because portals in Prey were fixed parts of the map, and they could open, you know, if you push a button or something like that, but you couldn't cast them wherever you want like you can in Portal. If they can figure out a way to let you cast your own portals and have enemies pass through them, that would be awesome. Oh,
that's the tricky part, because I think the AI just doesn't know what to do. Once they're, you know, with portals that are stationary, it's pre-programmed in them. You know,
right, you
the
can
levels
pass it.
Expanded. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you know, once you toss the AI in the middle of a room and or into a ceiling or something, and it pops out and the gravity's changed and their pathfinding is all screwed up, yeah, that's tricky.
Yeah. I always wanted to just be able to open a portal underneath somebody and have, and you know, I, like you do with the turrets in Portal, you know, be able to like open a portal over a fiery pit or something, and then cast a portal underneath somebody and have them fall into it. And mm-hmm. that's the kind of thing I want to see.
One of the
other game that should have. Oh, I'm sorry, Andy.
I was going to say one of the most intriguing parts of the Portal commentary was like how they programmed in the portal functionality to work with the world and the physics and all of that. And it's like, holy crap! It sounds like it's a really complex thing just to add to an engine. And that's why I was thinking Prey's portals were more predetermined, and it's got to be really hard for them to implement that sort of stuff into their engine.
Yeah, it's no easy task by any means.
And that was a Doom 3 engine.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, another game that should probably have some portals in it would be Sims 3. I'd love to see The Sims just fall through portals, but does anyone have any thoughts on this? I know the screenshots have come out, and it, you know, certainly does look more like a real world that the Sims are actually inhabiting now.
Right. It's no longer, you know, your Sims are just inhabiting a little lot, and you have to, you know, quit out and load into a new zone in order to move like to your neighbor's lot. And this time it's, you know, a whole big world, which is a huge improvement, I think. It's much less isolated.
But the gameplay is gonna be pretty much the same. I think the big difference is that the Sims this true. Time
well, there's supposed to be a lot less micromanagement, right?
There's a lot less micromanagement and a lot more like directed gameplay where you'll have goals to accomplish and you know things to actually do instead of you know, do whatever you want. So they are aware of the criticism of the last games, and you know the you know, hamster wheel thing where you're just, you know, going
feed,
through life and
eat,
right, satisfying those basic needs. They've gotten rid of the six bars that determine whether you have to pee or if you're dirty or whatever. they're really changing things, and we are having a preview on that in our upcoming June issue. Yes, so keep an eye on that for some more in-depth information on how the gameplay is going to be different.
Did you guys play the new expansion at all, or had any thoughts?
Which
on that?
New expansion?
Yeah, which new expansion?
I think it's called like the Stories or.
Now Sim Stories. Now those aren't actually expansions. Those are like their own line of self-contained Sims games that are kind of like they're like Sims adventure game hybrids. Because
is that like the Castaway one?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. They're goal oriented, and we've reviewed, I think, the two that have come out, and have given them, you know, fairly positive reviews.
Cool.
And you know, we've always liked the Sims series. It just doesn't necessarily appeal to, you know, hardcore gamers, like, which you know, is a problem because our audience is hardcore gamers for the most part.
I think we all love The Sims, and you know, at least the original Sims when it came out. It was so new and it was so fun to play.
You love it for a while, sure, and then it gets old.
Ton of copies.
I had fun killing people, but that's that was just me.
I mean, I like most games like that where there are just a bunch of different things you can do and create your own little areas and like things can go disastrously wrong if you nudge it in that direction. And you know, I just like seeing the calamity that you can create. But it's not like as it exists, like as Sims 1 and Sims 2 exist, they're not necessarily you know, what you think of as a game. They're living dollhouses.
Well, to close out our news section, we have news that on Tuesday, March 19th, there was the largest ever gathering of games characters ever on the Millennium Bridge in London. And making Guinness World Records history, they were able to get 80 people out there dressed up as their favorite video game characters. And I know there are some pictures online where there was like an army of Marios. They actually like bust in 30 children from a local primary school.
Orphanage.
Yeah, exactly.
They
couldn't get their daily gruel until they dressed up as Mario, I guess.
So and this is the world record for the most number of cosplayers in one area, or just on the London, or just on the Millennium Bridge.
I think the largest gathering of cosplayers. Like together.
Really?
That can't be right. It's got to be game specific.
It is game specific. Yes, it's the largest gathering of games characters.
Yeah,
because 80 doesn't sound like a lot. I've been to Comic-Con. Yeah. I've seen thousands of cosplayers. You go to a cosplay convention and there you have thousands of cosplayers.
You know, personally, I think what this is that the Guinness World of Records is really trying to make itself relevant again. And so
they're desperate.
They're just creating these new categories of records.
It's the highest number of cosplayers in this spot in that time taken, you know, with two photographs.
I'm sure they don't care. I'm sure they don't care like you know, the like an area specific, you know, where, a specific area where that record was set. I'm sure it's just, you know, this is the largest group of people dressed as video games that has bothered to call video game characters that has bothered to call the Guinness Book of World Records, and then they note where it happened. But I don't think I don't think there's going to be a separate record for you know, most biggest gathering here and a biggest gathering, you know, on the other side of town.
You know, I bet if we really wanted to, we could probably break this record ourselves at Comic-Con this year. You know, if we just easily. Like, yeah, if we just posted something saying, hey, everybody who's in a video game, you know, costume, come and meet on this, you know, at this area. At this
The WoW players alone would do that.
Exactly, yeah, at BlizzCon. Yeah, shouldn't BlizzCon hold the record?
Actually, yeah, I mean BlizzCon, they have their gatherings. I think Sony has them for EverQuest and PlantSide. You know, it's like, I would think that just one of those gatherings you would have more than 80 people in costume.
And although, you know, generally when you think of, you know, they're trying to get a bunch of people like this together in one spot, it's to, so that they can, you know, unleash the gas. But but I guess since there were children involved, they had to call off that plan.
I'm thinking that this is mainly like it's a console game and MMO phenomenon. Like, not a lot of people dress up as, say, I don't know, the guy Duke from Nukem? Square Cell or Duke Nukem.
I saw Gordon Freeman.
Norm, yeah. How many people dress up as characters from Team Fortress 2? What kind of what kind of freak would do
that? Halloween. Yeah, what kind of freak would do that? Indeed.
That was for Halloween, you know.
It's still you're still dressed up as a video game character.
Right, so if it's on Halloween, does that count as cosplay? Or is cosplay casual, you know, dressing up?
Why is it called cosplay?
Costume play.
Oh.
And it's disturbing when not done on Halloween.
And especially if there's anything sexual involved.
Well, at that point, are you a furry?
Yeah.
Well, if you're dressed up as Sonic, maybe.
Well, tentacles don't always have fur.
Or a Tauren.
I think if you're any type of animal, that it is considered being a furry. Even if that animal is not furry.
What if it's an anthropomorphic animal?
Okay, now we're getting into a weird area. I think Logan probably knows more about that, don't you? What do you think, Logan?
About what?
Anthropomorphism in furries?
Yeah. Well, Logan, when you dress up as a...
I like squirrels as squirrels, not as little human being squirrels. That's
so
horrible.
So you would not dress up as a squirrel for fun?
No, I would.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by would, he means has, and may in fact be right now.
I would totally do that.
Well, you know, there's the Conquer games. That's a squirrel. All right. So you dress up as him. Okay, well, let's move on and take a couple of questions.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Cliff from Anaheim. Hey, it's more of a suggestion today. I just thought it would be great if you guys filed like an article maybe in your magazine or on the podcast, maybe call it Second Look, where you guys go back and take a game that you reviewed and kind of go back and look at it maybe 6 months down the road after it's had a lot of patches and it's really been, you know, brought up to speed. For example, a game like The Witcher or Stalker. Those games had, you know, some big patches that came out that really changed a lot of the gameplay and the dynamics of the game. So I think that maybe some of your scores could be even better if they were looked at again. Anyway, it's just a suggestion. I thought you guys might want to talk about it. Anyway, take care. Keep up the great work.
Well, we're not going to start rescoring games just because it gets too confusing. You know, as far as the score goes, publishers get their one chance, you know, to wow us with the game when it first comes out. Now, that said, we do tend to relook at some old games, especially MMOs. You know, every once in a while we'll do a feature where we kind of like look at the state of how all the MMOs are doing. We've done that a few times in the past. And also sometimes in our columns, we will address like all the different patches that have come out for a game. I know that, you know, like you said, The Witcher is going to be getting a very substantial patch coming up soon. It's going to be adding a lot of content to it. So,
although that one might cheat its way into a second score because they are doing another retail SKU with it. They're going to have like a new version of The Witcher.
It's still going to be the same old game. You know, I would love to say that we would definitely be rescoring it, but it just gets too confusing, you know, from a consumer standpoint if you have multiple scores hanging around.
Right. I guess the one area where this does come into play though is expansion packs.
Yeah, that's true.
If a game has been patched significantly between an expansion between the initial game and the expansion, then you know that would probably get mentioned in the review and definitely factored into the score. If the core game has improved dramatically since it came out, and in addition to this new content that's coming with the expansion pack, then yeah,
absolutely. Yes.
And I do agree with the spirit of his question. I mean, on the podcast, we talk about all the time about games that have extraordinary mm-hmm. staying power. You know, just like we were talking about Prey not too long ago. That is a game that I've revisited more than once and thought this is a really fun story. It's a good story. It's a good game. And if you missed it, you know, you should check it out. There have been a lot of games like that.
Full disclosure, that story was written by Gary Whitta.
Absolutely it was. You know, God knows I've gone and on about Psychonauts, you know. But there are right. also games that I thought, you know, didn't stand the test of time very well.
Right, right. No, I agree. I mean, it would make a great podcast segment. So, you know, yes, we will definitely consider that.
But we're not going to rescore them.
Yes.
I recall one time browsing in a PC Gamer UK, they have this exact thing, I think. And I remember
yeah,
seeing Deus Ex, the second one, and they revisited and gave it like a pretty high score. And I was like, really?
I didn't realize that they rescored them. I know they do second looks, you know, and they
do rescore them, yes. But, you know,
wow,
it's not.
I didn't know that.
It's just, you know, and like this guy suggests, you know, it's something you should, you know, go back and check out, you know, keeping in mind that it's gotten better. The question is, what
do next?
The question is, for us, we have a limited number of pages in the magazine. We have to decide whether it's more important to do that or to rate the new stuff that comes out. And, you know, we have to keep up with the new stuff that comes out.
Hey, guys, this is Colby, a.k.a. Insert Lame Gamer Tag Name here. Quick question for you. So I just bought a new decent little mid-range rig equipped with a dual-core 8800 GT, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering what games you guys could recommend for me. I've basically been playing nothing but WoW for the last 2.5 years or so. And I bought this new system with the idea that it would inspire me to break out of my addiction. I bought BioShock, played it for about 20 minutes, and I've been playing nothing but WoW ever since. What a waste, right? Maybe the problem is I'm not much of an FPS fan. I tend to be drawn more towards strategy and especially RPG titles. So thinking back over the last 2 years or so, what are the best titles that you think I should try out, especially ones that would take the most advantage of my new system? Thanks. Love it. Keep it up, etc.
You know, if only he had asked us, if only he had said, you know, I really like horses. Because, you know, there has been a trend lately.
Okay. So what this refers to is that I've been noticing on the releases of new PC games that there has been a glut of, like, My Horse and Me and My Stables and all these, like, little girls and horses games that have been coming out. I don't think those are the types of games that he's...
No, I'm okay, that about. Yeah, it was clearly not what he was looking for, but...
We actually strongly advise that you not buy those games.
maybe as a second look down the road, we might change our minds.
Exactly. Certainly, absolutely.
After the Horse 2.0 patch.
So I, you know, if you were into shooters, I would definitely say trying out Crysis. But since you're not, I would say trying out The Witcher. If you're an MMO guy, you know, Age of Conan is going to be coming out pretty soon. And while we have not actually reviewed it yet because it's not done, it does look like it'll, you know, tax your system a little bit more than World
and
of Warcraft.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing that's not going to tax your system very much, but is definitely worth playing, and is Portal. You definitely have to play Portal.
Yeah.
Get the orange box. Play all.
Company of Heroes, if you like RTSs. Yeah.
Company of Heroes and or Supreme Commander, depending on which SKU you want to play. If you want to, you know, play something up close, it's Company of Heroes. If you want to play something much bigger scale, you go for Supreme Commander.
Also,
Sins of a Solar Empire.
Also, you know, if you haven't played Oblivion yet, do play that.
Looks gorgeous, maxed out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sins of a Solar Empire is great, but it is not multi-threaded, so it won't take advantage of your dual core. But, you know, it'll still run real fast and look nice. Anybody else have a favorite they want to toss at him?
Psychonauts, I'm sure.
You said everything, yeah.
Always.
Always.
CNC3, maybe?
Yeah, CNC3, which has the expansion pack coming out very, very soon. Yep. Kane's Wrath. Okay, maybe time for one more question.
Hey guys, it's Vagabond. I was just wondering if you guys think it was possible that the new Sam & Max episodic releases would somehow create a new interest in adventure games. There's still a huge adventure game fan base out there. It's still going strong, even years after they've gone out of style. Thanks again.
Hey, Vagabond, good to hear you. You're a regular forum poster, so good to hear your voice.
And he plays on our server every night. On weekends. He's there all the time, dude. Seems like. Just on weekends, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Definitely plays there more than I do, unfortunately. I'm like one of the main adventure guys here as well, along with Logan. I've been playing all the Sam & Max games. But I do have to say that, you know, there has been a dearth of really good adventure games, but the amount of adventure games that comes across my desk for reviews has not been going down at all. I mean, we get so many adventure games from overseas. I'd like to say that the success of Sam & Max is going to, you know, get like some of the big boys like, you know, Vivendi and LucasArts to get back into adventure gaming, but I just don't see it. I tend to think that it's going to be more of a business of, you know, us getting ports from overseas and episodic games like, you know, the smaller ones coming from Telltale.
And Penny Arcade is jumping into the fray as well.
But that's not really an adventure game, though.
It's close. I mean, it's an adventure RPG.
I would classify
hardly.
It as such, yeah.
And it is definitely it is definitely a story told in an adventure style. It has RPG, like JRPG combat in it. But it has the adventure stuff in there.
Well, but wouldn't that just be more like a Japanese RPG then?
Mm.
I mean, because that's kind of like how Japanese RPGs play out, though.
Yeah, but it's a little bit different.
You wander around and then, you know, you get pulled into combat.
It's less open ended than a JRPG typically is.
I think the problem with adventure games on consoles is that they don't have enough depth for the people who want RPGs and not enough action for the people who want platformers.
But they are excellent storytelling vehicles, though.
And I'd like that. I totally agree with Chuck. The volume has definitely not dropped, but the quality is pretty uninspiring. Yeah. But I do like that you see every now and then a little bit of experimentation or a new direction that's. You know, that's very laudable, even if the game itself may not be a huge success, like Penumbra, which brought in physics to the adventure game genre.
And what about Indigo Prophecy?
Indigo Prophecy, great example. It's a fantastic adventure game. We're reviewing a new one this month called The Experiment.
We have The Experiment that we're reviewing in the June issue, and what the idea behind that one is that you're actually not in control of the main character. You're kind of like you're stuck in a room, and you're like controlling the computers, so you're opening doors for the main character who is actually going and collecting the items.
And she's communicating with you through some sort of public address system or something like
that. Yeah, there's
system.
A public address system, and there's cameras like all around the ship.
So she knows that you can see her. I mean, it's what a great idea. That kind of you know, experimentation has been going on in adventure games since the beginning, and I'm glad that, you know, that we still see that, you know, today.
I think what
just to clarify, sorry, the June issue isn't actually coming out in June. You'll see that in April.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we just like to call it June, just to screw with you.
I think what Sam & Max has done, though, has brought back a major franchise player to the limelight, sort of. And so it's like, oh, when are they going to bring back Monkey Island? When are they going to bring back Grim Fandango? And I think that's sort of what's missing. But although, from just hearing you guys talk, I'm all excited to play Indigo Prophecy. I'm going to play that Sherlock Holmes game that came out a while back, and yeah, I've been playing through Sam & Max. Adventure gaming is definitely alive.
Indigo Prophecy is spectacular.
And, oh, yeah. Yeah, Indigo Prophecy is available. I think it's on... Is it on GameTap?
It's on Steam. It just came out on Steam.
Yeah. It's on Steam. Okay. Yeah.
And
so no excuses.
Play. I was really, really looking forward to what Double Fine was going to do. And then they did
that. Don't get looking started on that.
They did that thing.
So, yeah. There is Indigo Prophecy.
Yeah, but you know what? I want to send more props to Telltale for being... I'm just going to come out and say it, for being the only company that has done episodic gaming right.
Yeah, you that's far.
Yeah. Yeah, so far. Because unlike, you know, Valve, I mean, as good as their products are, I mean, they've actually kept to a schedule. And I have to say, if anybody's been following the Sam and Max Adventure series right now, you must play Chariots of the Dogs. It is the best one yet, I think.
Whoa.
It's just like a great TV show. You look forward to every season. You know when it's going to be delivered. You know, it gets your excitement up. The story is good. The characters are good. They're doing it right, you know? And it's fantastic.
Now, speaking of adventure games that we might not need, though, I did receive Lost via Domus, which is an adventure game from Ubisoft today. So, you know, some of the big players are still making adventure games. This one, I haven't seen a lot of kind words about so far online, but
I'll
be playing it.
You know what might have helped it? If it were Tom Clancy's Lost, you know.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that would have been brilliant.
Totally missed an opportunity there.
They should put Tom Clancy on every game.
They should. It's Tom Clancy's Far Cry 2.
Freelance Detectives.
Tom Clancy's Prince of Persia. That'd be good.
Oh, brilliant.
Tom Clancy's Assassin's Creed.
Oh, by the way, so Dan, before we go into playlist, I think there was a correction in our last issue that you wanted to...
Okay, so there was a misprint in the May issue, the gun show issue, in the letter section, in the contest to win a free copy of Frontline's Fuel of War. We mistakenly said that the contest ends March 20th, which is today. The issue has not yet hit stand, so that's a little bit early. So that contest will be in effect until April 1st, and we will in the next issue we'll have that correction as well. So if you want that copy, feel free to enter tomorrow or the next day, or until April 1st.
All right, well, let's move on to playlist. Logan, what have you been playing?
I picked up Bioshock again to try out some of the new plasmids, but one thing I've really been getting into again is DEF CON. A friend of mine doesn't have a very powerful system, so that's something that he could play, and I'm not that great at strategy games, so it's nice to have a game where it's not really about winning, but just losing less. So,
well, that's a game I think Clear War is about.
Yeah,
we should play an office game of that, spread out through an entire day.
Yeah.
Dan, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Sins of the Solar Empire still. Norm and I were playing yesterday. Played against the unfair AI, which is a little bit unfair, but we still managed to beat it.
I just keep hearing you guys saying things like "Go get purple." Now get green, and I thought you said let's kill Seth Green yesterday.
Well, he totally deserves it. No, I like Seth Green. And I've also been working my way through Crisis again on Delta.
Wow!
Just for bragging rights, I'm taking my time though, and just having fun with some of the encounters. Getting my ass kicked for many times, but it's pretty, and because I just got a quad core in there to stabilize my frame rates. Playing at my 1080p resolution, which is 1920x1080, I'm getting on high detail, I'm getting about 20-25ish frames per second. So it still taxes a very high end system.
So are you playing with the new patch?
Yeah, the 1.2 patch. The only difference you really notice in the single player anyway is that the to throw a punch it now only takes 10 energy out of your suit, so you can when you're in strength mode. So you can do a lot more damage in strength mode before you get killed.
And Norm, what have you been playing?
Like Dan said, we played a game of Sins of Solar Empire. I think that's like a once a week game. Because it just lasts so long. Been playing Assassin's Creed for PC. Never really finished it on the Xbox, so here's my chance. And
we should specify,
also,
Norm. We should specify that the game we played yesterday, it was a 2v2 versus the hardest AI. That probably lasted us about 2 hours.
No, a little more than that. I think we started at 4 and got out there at 7:30.
Was it that bad? Okay, maybe.
Yeah. And then also, of course, Team Fortress 2. Cannot stop playing that game. Very excited for the new map that's coming out.
Andy, what are you playing?
I've been playing Sam and Max Season 2, Episodes 2 and 3. And I am on a schedule with Sins of the Solar Empire. I play every Wednesday night. So yeah, definitely agree with you, Norm. It's a once a weeker. I just love going straight for the... on the Vasari, just getting all military buildings and rushing for that cannon that shoots across the planets.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't even know. It's not even that great, but it's just...
Well, the Vasari's cannon, that just damages everything in the Gravwell, right? It doesn't destroy the planet itself?
Oh, no, it doesn't destroy the planet, but it disables everything for a short period of time.
Right. You have to time that really well, because if your ships are already in that Gravwell, they'll be disabled as well, so you lose the advantage.
Yeah.
But if you fire it, and it also takes a while to get from the gun to the planet that you hit, so you have to time it really well so that you jump in right after it hits, and then you get the maximum advantage.
Yeah, it's definitely really fun. It gives me that like going for the nuke rush CNC like old school days. It's good. I'm scared to start venturing out onto the online space and playing human opponents. Have you done much of that?
A little bit. You really have to watch out for people that have a lot of wins under their under their profile, because those guys are deadly. It's gotten a little bit better, I think, in the 1.03, because in 1.02 the long range missile frigates were just, they could mass those and just bowl right over you. But they've been made more expensive now and weakened a little bit, I think. So it's a little bit easier to combat that.
Cool. Yeah. So you know, if everybody wants to play Wednesday nights, hit me up on Steam. Sam and Max, the third episode of Season 2, The Night of the Raving Dead, is what I'm on. That's such a great game.
It is a great game.
Just brilliant characters, and the style is so humorous. Everything about it is like just great adventure gaming.
Well, what I've been really impressed about, and I just finished, for my playlist, I just finished playing Chariots of the Dogs. And what I've been so amazed about this season is that they just haven't let up with the creativity. I mean, the writing has just remained so incredibly fresh, you know. And you would think that, you know, trying to do, you know, 5 episodes in a season, and each episode kind of like tackles a different theme, a different topic, that, you know, you would start to kind of like run out of steam, that they would, start to get a little bit tired, and it really hasn't. I mean, I think the fourth episode for this season, much like the fourth episode for last season, may be the strongest one for the entire season, and it ends with a bit of a lead in into the fifth episode for season 2. So fifth episode is going to be the last one for this season. And I'm hoping that it's going to, you know, like really blow it all out of the water. It's going to be like this great ultimate climax.
Man, yeah, those games are just, I just love the way they take the characters from episode to episode, but they don't keep it stale. Like, you're exactly right. The creativity is just through the roof.
Also, in my non-adventure gaming, I've just started playing, because I had not played it at all since Norm did the review this time. I've started playing episode 2 of Half-Life 2. So I'm finally catching up with the adventures of Alex and all.
How far into it are you?
Not terribly far. I'm only like an hour into it right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how that one starts out.
The train crash.
Yeah, it's right. It's right after, you know, the train crashed, and so you're in the sinking train, and Alex kind of like helps you get out.
Have you fought your first hunter yet?
Yes, I have. I think yes. Well, I made my way through the bug caves.
Right. Oh, okay. You know what? The game's not as long as you think it is. You're a fair amount in.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I just love in the bug caves. The one of those guys is voiced by Adam Baldwin, from Firefly.
Wait, which guy? Oh, yeah, he actually does a lot of the civilian dudes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I love his voice. It's great.
Well, before we close out today, I know Logan, you wanted to say something.
Yeah. For all you guys out there, guys and gals, who are running Vista, you may or may not know that the Vista Service Pack 1 is now available for download from the Microsoft website.
Oh, we forgot to talk about that.
And, we've got a link. You can we've got a link on our website at www.pcgamer.com where you can go and grab it if you'd like. If you've got automatic update turned on, it's not going to be pushed to you until April. So if you want it before then, you have to go and grab it yourself and install it yourself. But, you know, it's a pretty easy process. But I'd love to find out what your experience with it is. Did you have problems installing it? Do you find performance to be better or worse? So again, on our website, I have a link with my email on it. So just shoot me an email at logan, logan@pcgamer.com, with SP1 in the subject line, and let me know. Just drop me a quick line to tell me what you think about the service pack, because I'd love to get an idea how it's working across a broad range of systems.
Yeah, because we've installed it. Norm and I have both installed it. We both had flawless installs. I mean, I'm just kind of underwhelmed by the lack of it doing anything.
are you talking about in your games, like
in anything? I mean, there is virtually no difference whatsoever in visual or performance. I mean, I guess the one thing it's supposed to really fix is the copy speeds, but you know, because Vista spends a long time like preparing to copy, and then copying between drives takes longer than it really should have. I haven't really tried that much yet, but
yeah.
But other than that, I have noticed zero difference. Mm-hmm. So I mean I'm sure it might be more secure. I browsed over the like change log for it, and the most significant thing I could find was, or that you know, an end user might actually notice, is if you have user access control turned on, which you really should not, because it's annoying as hell. If you like the difference is now, if you try to create a folder in a protected area, it will only give you one pop-up asking if you really want to do that instead of four. So,
but I think they also added a horse game to the little.
I hope.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So,
my Windows Vista stable.
Yeah, I think this is the most disappointing 500 megabyte patch I've ever downloaded.
Wow. All right, well, thank you, Logan, and thanks to everyone for joining us today. If you would like to subscribe to PC Gamer Magazine, head on over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe, and please send us money. And if you'd like to submit a question to the podcast, you can call 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, and leave a voice message, or if you'd like to submit an MP3, email it to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. On behalf of Logan, Dan, Norm, Andy, and myself, thanks for listening, and see you next week.
Yeah, I didn't eat any dinner yesterday.
I didn't eat breakfast yesterday. Dinner yesterday. I haven't eaten breakfast or lunch today.
Hungry. You haven't eaten at all today?
Nope. Six more days and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we'll talk about it during the podcast.
Okay. Oh, crap. I need to pull up the script. Hold on.
Oh, somebody did not come to class
understudy,
prepared.
Understudy.
I'm helping Dan Morris with something right now. He called during the middle of the last segment.